Rob Byrne, SAFM Traffic.
Mediated conversation on SAFM.
28 minutes now to 9, the time for your mediated conversation this morning. After the COVID-19 pandemic, the most important question that we face as a country is whether we can get young people into work. You'll know how many young people are not working and are not in educational training at the moment. While the numbers can vary, it seems certain that they are at least 9 million young people who are not working or studying at the moment, and the prospects for them to get into sustainable jobs in the future are very slim. This affects us in all sorts of ways. It leads to frustration and anger and poverty and inequality, and that's just the beginning. So then, what options are there to try and improve the situation? This is the subject of your mediated conversation this morning. First, you'll hear from the head of the Centre for Development and Enterprise, Anne Bernstein. They've released a new report with several recommendations on how to improve the situation. Then you'll hear from Professor Uli Chinyamurindi, head of business management at Fort Hare University. He's also studied the issue of youth unemployment. Rob Ukart is the head of research at the Harambee Youth Accelerator. They try and get young people into jobs. We start then with Anne Bernstein. Anne, good morning and thank you for your time this morning.
Good morning. Hi, Stephen.
We know the scale of the problem, but there are also important features within it. For example, it seems that there are more young women who are unemployed than men, partly because of childcare issues. The real problem is it seems to be very, very difficult for people who are young, who are unemployed now, to get any kind of sustainable job.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, you would think that what happened in July, where whatever the implications of the attempted insurrection, which are still unclear, the opportunistic looting that we saw clearly reflected young people's rising frustrations, desperation, and disregard for the law. One would think that following that, there would be a bold and urgent response to this catastrophic situation where nearly half the young people who are aged 15 to 34 are not in education, training, or employment. But we haven't seen that.
I mean, the real problem appears to be that younger people have not received a useful education. I'll use the phrase, actually, betrayed by our education system. So they don't have skills that businesses want. How big is that gap between what businesses want and what young people can actually offer?
You have to start in a different place, Stephen. I think you have to start with, unless you have a growing economy, South Africa can never turn this catastrophic situation around. So the first thing is the economy hasn't really grown, even pre-COVID, for at least 5, 6, 7 years. That's the first thing. So we have to do everything possible to persuade, to create a new environment, and that requires policy reform. The second thing is that we can't just go for growth. We have to go for labor-intensive growth. We have to get the incentives right that employers are prepared to risk hiring young people who've come out of a bad education, who've got no work experience, and probably come from families and communities where nobody works. The price of labor is too high, and all the rules and regulations make employers reluctant to take a risk on young people. And then thirdly, surely it's time that we actually made the changes to improve both the basic education system and our skills training system post-school, where the TVETs are expensive and they have incredibly low throughput of students. And their links to business, to firms, are generally very weak.
So, I mean, what you say in your report, as I understand it, is the CETA system doesn't really work. That's why where business is supposed to sort of pay for the training of people. That doesn't work. The TVET system doesn't work. You suggest there should be more business involvement in the training of young people. How would that work? What are you recommending?
Well, there are a number of... We looked at the international experience. We looked at a lot of projects in Bushbuck Ridge and Alexandra Township as two case studies. And there are lots of places where young people are getting, you know, youth centers where you get some skills, but generally they're very internally focused to the township rather than how to get jobs in, say, Sandton, where there's lots more opportunities than in the township. So a lot of the initiatives we have are too small and they're not really focused on getting the right skills for work. The TVETs are also, this is starting to change, but not at the rate that it should be. The TVETs are a big problem, and we need to rethink this. And it has to be done in association with business. So the success stories in other countries are where vocational education and training is linked to the needs of firms and what firms anticipate for the future. And that, we've got to get that relationship much better. Now, the CETAs are for people who already have a job, but the point is that business is paying a lot of money for a system that almost everyone agrees, from unions to business to many government people, doesn't work. So business isn't going to put up more money when they're paying for something that is a failure. So we have to rethink this entire area. Can we do shorter courses? What will business need today and in the future? But unless, you know, I learned something a long time ago from the head of education in Ghana. You can push young people to work hard and to you know, make sacrifices to get various skills, but unless there are jobs for those people, this is a terribly frustrating experience, and we should beware dashed expectations in our particular situation. So you've got to get these three things, these three buckets of reform going in the right sequence. Otherwise, we're going to be in big trouble, more trouble than we are today.
You said a little while ago, and you do say it in your report, it should be easier and cheaper to employ young people. Now, this is very contentious. I mean, unions will go for you, other organizations will go for you. Why do you believe that?
Look, South Africans, you know, we're paralyzed. On the one hand, there are unions and other interests in the ruling party who don't want to move on the labor laws. On the other hand, there are people both within the Treasury and in other parts of government who are saying we have to move here. And business is also starting to say we have to move on the labor laws if we're going to be a more labor-intensive economy. And, you know, we can't all just stay exactly where we are. We have to try some new things. We have to take some risks. And we have put forward carefully calibrated reforms to the labor laws, not wholesale reforms, not taking away the rights that unions have struggled for so long, but we're saying we have to change some things in order to enable smaller businesses to start up and new firms to start up and to incentivize employers to hire young, inexperienced workers. We are proposing a reform zone, a special zone to test out whether South Africa can attract low-skill manufacturing in the Kuga zone. And that's an experiment. Let's try it. If it works, I think there would be a lot more support for this kind of an initiative. If it doesn't, well, we were wrong, and hopefully other people will put some practical ideas on the table. But to just keep talking about this phenomenon and not taking the policy decisions we need is what's causing South Africa to be probably the country with the highest youth unemployment in the world.
Anne Bernstein, thank you. Head of the Center for Development and Enterprise. I do appreciate the time. Their report released yesterday, as it happens. You were there, SAFM. Your mediated conversation continues 9 minutes to 9 around youth unemployment. Professor Willie Chinyamurindi is the head of business management at Fort Hare University. He studied the issue of youth unemployment. Professor, good morning, and thank you for your time.
Good morning, Stephen. Always great to be on your show.
I'm going to come to the other recommendations of the centre in a moment, and I know that you've seen the report. But first, the idea of making it easier for companies to hire younger people. So easier and cheaper, and what I think this really means, is for companies to be able to fire younger people if it doesn't work out as well. And I think that's the sort of, you know, part of this as well. Do you believe that that would make a difference? Is that part of the problem? And I realise, Professor, it's a very political issue, this.
Absolutely, Stephen, and I also cringed a bit making it easier because my connotation there was trying to also safeguard the other extreme of exploitation. You don't want young people to be exploited, and I believe that the current system of internship is really a form of that exploitation that happens in the form of, in the argument of giving young people skills. However, when I read the report, what I do welcome is the collective idea of bringing varying stakeholders to the table. The first important stakeholder is obviously and the direction of this expanded economy is policy certainty around addressing some of the challenges that these young people are facing. And this policy direction is needed, and it will probably be the most deliberate and intentional effort to set the scene or the tone for businesses to be interested in employing young people. And most businesses right now would have to be struggling with issues of the pandemic, cutting down the uncertainty of moving between the different levels, and it means closure, limited hours of operation. If the government can create a position of certainty around the nature of the challenge related to these young people, I think this would also then allow for other things that the report talks about, incentivizing young people. Also looking at the idea of making sure that the work that is being, or the skills being given to these young people, are skills that are relevant and not just photocopying and being asked at a government department to just run down the street and buy a cool drink for the people in the office. And you're talking about real hard skills that these young people would need.
The real issue, I suppose, is education. So essentially, I'm no expert in this, but it would seem to me that one of the big problems is that young people almost need a second education. I don't mean, another 12 years. What I do mean is some kind of skilling or reskilling or whatever we want to call it. How should we do that as a society? We're talking about trying to educate or re-educate people, say, between 18 and 25.
I think there's room, Stephen, in the current system to change a few things. For instance, I have a third year cohort of students. I'm teaching a module on strategic management and entrepreneurship development and so forth. It would be injurious for me as a lecturer to be pumping these students with so much theory around the etiquette around starting small businesses, when I should actually be exposing them to the real-world life scenario of saying, okay, so here's the assignment. Go and interview somebody who is running a small business. What do you learn from that? And finding ways of changing the current system. I think what we need really is an overhaul of what we are currently doing to try and incorporate some of the aspects that this report talks about, which is the aspects of more practical, real-life scenarios to this current education system. It's not enough to just pump our students with all the theories and, we need some form of an intervention where we also put ourselves as lecturers and educators to school on what are we doing right and what are we not doing right in terms of addressing this challenge before us.
What it also tells us is that this is going to require a massive social effort. I don't know if we see the social effort. I mean, we lament this, and Anne Bernstein, I think we'd have to agree that government needs to do something, and yet nothing's happened in this for quite a long time, despite the fact that it's obvious the problem is getting worse.
And the events in the two areas, Gauteng and KZN, really then point to us that we must be doing something quickly, because the challenge is huge, Stephen. And the report talks about the angle of rurality. I work in a predominantly rural setup. I know very well when students write to us about lack of opportunities, local economic development opportunities in the areas that they are in. Maybe to be cautious here, we don't need another uprising, as the report states, in KZN or any part of the country to remind us of the scale of the challenge we have before us.
In the middle of this is our local elections, and I know that you've been looking at the manifestos of political parties, and political parties talk about this to a large extent. Do you believe they have solutions to the problem? Are they offering options?
So when I was reading the manifesto of the different political parties, the top three parties, if you like, you could see similarity in some of the aspects that the report talks about. I mean, the report talks about the critique of the expanded work program. In the scenario, the report is advocating for the expanded works program to take more, you know, efficacy around that. And yet, when I read the DA manifesto, the DA was scathing about the impact of such intervention, such as the expanded works program. So the different political parties even have approached it from different angles. EFF coming to point out the areas of advocacy and lobbying that they have done, you know, making, putting to check some of the major political parties who are ruling in these metros, but not much tangible real-life scenario that that young person in Ekurhuleni has benefited from a project on skills development that has been run by this political party. So there's a lot of diagnosis of the problem, Stephen, and the fine line between the solutions, you know, it's stuff we've heard before. Whether it will work or not, it really leaves me a bit cautious, really.
Well, I mean, this comes to the other problem we have. I mean, many people call it an insiders and outsiders problem. If you're inside employment,
Yes. You're
okay. If you're outside, you're almost never going to get in. So the problem with that is that the people who are in employment, the interests are very entrenched, and so it's quite difficult to get them to remove those interests or to break down, to get past those entrenched interests. What I think I'm trying to say is there something within the very nature of our society, maybe it's the inequality or something, that is preventing us from actually finding a way to solve this? I mean, we can blame leadership all we like, but leadership also responds to constituencies.
Leadership also sets the tone sometimes, and that responsiveness that you're talking about. I think, yes, the fabric really is wearing and tearing, particularly on the social side. I mean, we're in an equal society. We're in an equal country where there are these huge disparities between the haves and the have-nots. And really, these have and have-nots, this divide that we have, really nearly finds its platform of play, particularly in this skills unemployment challenge that we're talking about, Stephen.
Professor Willie Chinyamonrindi, thank you very much indeed. Head of Business Management at Fort Hare University, an economist, of course. In a moment, we'll speak to Rob Urquhart, the head of research at Harambe, an organization that tries to get young people into work. You with SAFM, your mediated conversation will continue 10 minutes to 9. SAFM. Guiding.